Hello, and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with McLean's Magazine.
It's been another week of explosive testimony at the trial for Senator Mike Duffy. The former lawyer for the Prime Minister's office, Benjamin Perrin, says he believes the Prime Minister approved the five-point plan that includes someone else paying Duffy's expenses. And he says the PM's current chief of staff, Ray Novak, knew about Duffy's secret $90,000 deal with Nigel Wright 2 months before it was exposed by the media.
The testimony contradicts what we've been told by the Conservative Party and Nigel Wright. We speak with a crisis communications expert about how the Conservatives have been handling the revelations, and we look at how the Tory base has been dealing with such negative news during the campaign.
Election Day is October 19th, but you don't have to wait to cast your ballot. Did you know you can actually vote on any day of the election campaign? Most Canadians don't, and we'll speak with the head of Elections Canada about the little-known fact.
This week, McLean's held a special election primer event in the Capitol. Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes and political editor Paul Wells held panels to get social media and polling updates from experts and to check in with the partisans to see how the campaign is going.
For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill. The trial for Senator Mike Duffy kicked into high gear this week, with contradictions building up and more questions being raised about what the Prime Minister knew and when members of his staff were made aware of that secret Wright-Duffy deal.
Why is it that you think the Prime Minister knew and approved of the five-point plan?
Who's lying in this matter? I mean, there's so many versions. What's happening?
What do you think of
Did
the contradictions from your testimony to the others?
That's the sound of reporters shouting questions at Benjamin Perrin, the former legal counsel to the Prime Minister's office. He took the stand on Thursday after days of the defense questioning Nigel Wright, the former chief of staff to the Prime Minister, who wrote that $90,000 check. At times, the two gave very different versions of events. Wright testified about a conference call where he explained to Duffy's lawyer he would be personally repaying Duffy's expenses. In Wright's words, the current chief of staff to the Prime Minister, Ray Novak, had popped in and out of the office but didn't take part in the call. The Conservative Party had claimed Novak didn't hear the discussions of Wright's check. But when Perrin spoke of the call, he remembered Novak sitting next to him. And before the call even took place, Wright told both of them he would be footing the bill for Duffy's expenses. Perrin went on to say he turned to look at Novak but saw no reaction. During the call, Wright repeated his plan to Duffy's lawyer, saying Duffy will be repaying because it's coming out of my pocket. Perrin said Novak was there throughout the call.
On another issue, Wright had insisted he never told the Prime Minister about the fact that someone else would repay Duffy's expenses as a part of the five-point plan. Wright explained his email stating they were, quote, good to go from the PM, was only in relation to the general plan for Duffy to repay, and he never made the distinction that the money wouldn't come from Duffy's wallet. But Perrin told the court that he believed Wright's good-to-go email meant the Prime Minister directly approved the plan. He admitted, though, he never dealt directly with Harper, so this was an assumption. Another interesting revelation is that Nigel Wright was in contact with Ray Novak the week before he was to take the stand. The two spoke over BlackBerry Messenger, although Wright did not keep a record of the conversation and refused to discuss it with reporters. Perrin also testified that since leaving the Prime Minister's office, members of the PMO have contacted him. He indicated he had records of this, but the defense and the Crown didn't pursue the matter, and Perrin refused to speak to the media.
Now, it's clear the Duffy trial has been dogging the Conservative campaign for the last 2 weeks, and leader Stephen Harper was asked almost nonstop about the revelations, but in response, he stuck to his script.
My judgment on this case is very clear, and let's be clear what this case is about. Now, contrary to what some may be reading, there is one person on trial here. That person is Mr. Duffy, because Mr. Duffy took taxpayers' money that I believed right from the outset he should not be taking. And I told him so. And I told him to repay it. He did not repay it. That's why I had to take action against him. The reason he did not repay it is Mr. Wright decided to pay it for him. Mr. Wright did reimburse the taxpayers. I'll give him that. But he also acted contrary to my wishes and allowed Mr. Duffy to keep the money, which he has to this day. These are the two people who are responsible. They've been held accountable. And as I said, that's exactly the appropriate thing to do. And that's what I've done. When people are working for me, they have my confidence. If they didn't have my confidence, they wouldn't be working for me. And in this case, I have held the two people accountable who are responsible.
So the strategy from the Conservative Party seems to be repeat the core message and never waver from it. But is that the right move as the scandal grows and the narrative changes? To find out, I speak with Alan Bonner, who's an expert on political and crisis communications. I guess the old political saying is the cover-up is always worse than the problem. We saw that when the Nigel Wright check came out, and you know, that became a much larger story than Duffy's expenses on their own. After that, Canadians were told that this was just between two people, Nigel Wright and Senator Duffy. Since that point, we've seen through evidence in court that there were many more people involved. And the Conservatives are sticking to the story that this is just between Nigel Wright and Senator Duffy, despite a lot of the revelations that have come out. Is that the proper strategy to take, or should they be addressing this differently?
It seems to me that it strains credulity to think that only two people knew about this. Political aides are supposed to shield the boss from certain facts, but they're normally mundane facts. He was about to sign that letter to you. He will be happy to give you a recommendation. He'll be happy to consider you as an appointee and this sort of stuff. But when it gets to something like this that just, you know, sounds odd, nothing illegal, I guess, about Nigel Wright writing out this check, but it certainly sounds odd, and you wonder also why Mr. Wright didn't be the key donor in a series of fundraisers. No reason why this couldn't have been discharged in an above-board fundraising way.
But the communication strategy of just sticking to the script that you've had for a very long time and not really wavering from that script when the facts brought up in court tell a totally different story. Should they be adapting their message?
Well, don't forget, the facts in court are to be determined by the judge. The witnesses present their best recollection of events. The lawyers, as officers of the court, are required to provide zealous advocacy and the most plausible case possible. It is the judge who decides on the evidence what is the most plausible story. So we kind of have to wait for that. As a generic matter, you don't robotically keep repeating the same answer over and over again. This is fine on a newscast on the radio where your clip is going to be 8 seconds long, but in a column, in a news story in print, on television, in a longer radio piece, it sounds robotic to keep repeating the same thing over and over again. Imagine you're at a dinner party and you make a statement about a public event. And your dinner party companion says, yes, but I read something different in the newspaper, or I heard a different account on the radio, and you simply repeat your original message without acknowledging that your dinner party companion has said something new or different or contradictory. That person would think that you're a little odd. You have to dignify the question, and while not trying a case in public or showing disrespect for the legal process, at least acknowledge that something has just been asked of you.
Is it counterproductive? Does it hurt your message in the end if you don't address the questions properly?
The end result of this robotic repeating of answers is that this is now the news story. We're not getting past the mystery and the interesting contradictions because of a lack of information.
Is it the right strategy to make definitive comments like the party has when, you know, we've been seeing details pop up in court like this that seem to contradict what they're saying?
All right, let me provide a principle of crisis communication. You avoid the negative and you avoid absolutes. The words no, not, never, nothing, none, and always are very difficult to live with. If you say, no one knew, no one else knew, we have always known, we would never have done this, you can't be sure because you are part of a large organization with a large number of people and you can't speak for them all. So that is a dangerous strategy to engage in absolutes. There will be different stories that come out of this. If you turn to someone in a meeting and look for his reaction and there is none, he could have been daydreaming. He could have had an earpiece in his ear and been on the telephone. Any number of things could explain that, and any number of things can explain whether someone doesn't recall something that has gone on in a long teleconference. Sometimes we tune out. But I'm not judging this. It's going to be the judge that judges this. The damaging matter is the conflicting version of events and too much communication too early about this.
The conservatives are in a bad spot right now. I don't think anyone would argue with that, given what's been going on. This is a long campaign, though. So they have time after all of this testimony and these revelations to try and improve. So what do the conservatives have to do now moving forward to try and improve, try and repair the damage done from the testimony we've heard at the Mike Duffy trial?
Well, one of the classic things to do in a low-trust, high-concern situation where people are really worried about something or and are unsure of the trustworthiness of the messenger is to deal with the concern that the audience obviously has. I think a Senate reform package or using moral suasion, not a constitutional matter, would go a long way to saying we take this really seriously. There's going to be a vetting process. We're going to only have senators that are recommended by the provinces upon election if we can convince the provinces to do that. Treasury Board guidelines for expenses, the use of via rail instead of airplanes, a cap on expenses. Any number of things would at least show that the government of the day is taking these kinds of things enormously seriously. If a $16 glass of orange juice is cost somebody her job, this should at least cause a few paragraphs in a sentence during the next 60 days of the election campaign.
Is there anything else in terms of damage control that the conservatives can do aside from just sending out a message of how they think the Senate should be fixed?
Well, this is one of those stories that is very difficult to bump off the front pages of the paper. However, no comparison whatsoever, other than the news value of it. By Election Day 1972, only 50% of Americans had ever even heard of the word Watergate. This story is probably not resonating all that much across the country, but there is 60 days to go. And it is hard to imagine what is going to be more newsworthy in the pro forma campaign announcements than this case, which has, you know, all the mysterious and salacious elements that you could want. I think it has to be addressed. I think that the politicians campaigning for office need to show that they're taking this seriously and they're going to try to reform matters the best they can without opening up the Constitution.
That was Alan Bonner, an expert in political and crisis communications, weighing in on how the Conservative Party has dealt with the revelations in the trial for Senator Mike Duffy.
The developments in the Duffy trial this week have no doubt stung the Conservative campaign. At every media availability, Conservative leader Stephen Harper has been peppered with questions about the testimony, the contradictions, and the involvement of his most senior aides. But frustrations boiled over when Harper made a stop in Toronto. Supporters in the crowd heckled reporters as they asked their questions, and after the event, one man, now identified as Earl Cowan, decided to take on the media himself.
Duffy made a bit of cheating on his tax return, and you're turning it into an issue.
Why do you think that he has no right to ask about the deal? He believes Mr. Harper knew. Why do you think Mr. Harper didn't know anything?
Because it isn't a deal. It's a nothing. Harper doesn't read income tax forms, you idiot. It's done by the people in the tax department.
But you don't believe that anybody else in that office knew about this deal and kept it?
I believe that you cheat more on your taxes than Duffy ever did.
Why would you say I cheat on my
taxes? Because you're a lying piece of
shit. Oh.
Yeah, and you too.
Why would you say that?
You're making an issue out of Duffy? He's a nothing.
He's in the court
Harper
right
has
now.
Produced good government.
He's in the court
it's
right
nothing.
He's
it's
but
nothing.
But
it's zero.
But
nothing.
So he's
zero.
Innocent. But if he knew, do you believe that any other people in the office knew about this?
I think you're a piece of lying shit. And your media with you.
What's your name?
Go stuff yourself.
While he seems to have been misinformed about the issues in this trial, his frustration with the media is clear. Aaron, you've been writing about all of this for McLean's. Is this just the anger of one man, or is it a sign of a broader issue in the conservative base?
Well, I suspect maybe the rest of the conservative base doesn't share this one particular individual's thoughts and feelings on things. I suspect there is a certain amount of frustration with how things are going in the campaign, at least in terms of what the media is focused on and what the prime minister is being asked about every day. As I wrote about earlier this week, there have been these moments in previous campaigns where conservative partisans who are present for these media availabilities have heckled and booed and just generally not been very happy with the questions that are being asked. I think that goes to a couple things. First, the setup of these media availabilities. They're not news conferences in the usual traditional sense. They're basically rallies where reporters are invited to ask questions. And second, the Conservative Party has spent, you know, several years building up the idea that the Ottawa media elite, quote unquote, is sort of out to get them or is standing in their way. So there's already kind of a feeling of animosity. And now you've got the media sort of dwelling on this scandal that, you know, presumably conservatives don't want to be talking about.
I guess the big question is, you know, the conservatives are frustrated by all of this. They're not getting the message across that they want to get across. So do you think in the end this is actually hurting the Conservative Party, or do you think that the whole Duffy trial issue is more of an Ottawa bubble story?
I suspect some of the details are probably very Ottawa bubbly. You know, I don't know if everyone is kind of following exactly the ins and outs of what's going on here. But the basic idea, I suspect, is getting across, which is that there are you know, one or two major contradictions here. There are, you know, some open questions that have to be kind of explained, or at least there are a lot of things going on here that don't seem great or don't seem ideal about how the whole thing was handled. And I suspect that just leads to a couple of things. First, I would wonder how sort of soft conservative supporters, people who could be persuaded to vote for another party or to stay home, how they're feeling. And I would wonder whether it's starting to kind of, loosen up kind of that conservative voting coalition, and whether this makes it that much harder for conservatives to get out their vote later this fall.
But we haven't seen anything in terms of the polling yet.
No, not really. The polls have been fairly static, I think. You're at least seeing the fact that the Conservatives aren't coming up. They aren't really making any inroads against the NDP or pulling away from the Liberals. But this is the sort of thing that may take a while to kind of, particularly these last 2 weeks, may take a while to kind of to see the effect of things.
All right. Thanks very much, Aaron. Still to come on the show, we speak with the head of Elections Canada about a little known fact that you can cast your ballot any day you want during the campaign. And we have a special two-part edition of the McLean's panel where we get campaign updates from Google, the polling firm Abacus Data, and pundits from the three main parties. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor for McLean's Magazine.
Coming up on the show, we have a special two-part edition of the McLean's panel bringing in Google Canada, Abacus Data, and pundits from the three main parties. But first,
did you know you don't actually have to wait until October 19th to cast your ballot in this federal election? Most people think they at least have to wait for the advance polls to open up, but you may be surprised to find out that you can technically register your vote on any day of the election campaign.
I admit, this was news to me, although it's exactly what Mark Mayran, the head of Elections Canada, told McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes when the two sat down for an interview.
So, Mr. Mayran, when we think about, of course, the election day, we've got 4 days of advance polling over the Thanksgiving weekend. But you were just reminding me, you can vote anytime. Can you explain
anytime.
That?
As we speak, in fact, I think it's the third day that the election was called, we had someone who voted, the first vote that we registered in the country. You can vote anytime at any of our location across the country, and we've got 480 of them. They're easy to find. Again, look at the website. And you just show up at the office and say that I would like to vote. For example, I live in Vancouver, but I'm in Toronto this weekend. I've got a bit of time on my hand. You could show up at any of our offices in Toronto, cast a ballot for your riding in Vancouver. So again, anywhere.
And any riding in the country, anywhere.
And basically any time during... currently, we're operating at reduced hours for August, and they're all available, but from 10 to 5 essentially every day. But starting Labor Day, we'll be open 12 hours a day across the country.
Do you know how many people do that? I don't even think about these voters. How many people avail?
It's still a small number. I think it's not well known. That's one thing. The other thing is that people, for whatever reason, believe they need to have a reason.
Yeah.
For to use that service. But again, it's available. It's a matter of convenience.
Right.
If it's more convenient for you to use that option, it's easy, it's available, it's there.
Yeah.
And our offices are set up to welcome you. And
so if you've made up your mind,
yeah,
and you feel like doing it.
Even though candidates have not been confirmed, we will give you a blank ballot and you will write in the candidates that you want to vote for. So
seriously?
You have to check. No, yes, yes.
In your writing, you can say, but you'd have to know the actual name.
Yeah, you will have
you
to contact
the NDP candidate.
Yeah, you have to know the candidate, so you will check with the party or whoever. If it's an independent that you know, you confirm the name.
When you go to one of these offices, sorry to interrupt, they'll give you the actual ballot. They'll, what do? They print you out the ballot from your
They writing? Will give you what we call a blank ballot.
Right.
You will write in the name. As after the closure of nominations for candidates, then they will be able to give you the ballot.
Right. And then if I go and do that right now, and then I change my mind in October, can I go that, and take that
no,
ballot?
No, you're done. You're done.
What?
No. You only vote once.
Oh, okay. People should be sure, you're saying, if they want to
yes,
do this.
Yes. And rest assured also that your name will be struck out for your writing in Vancouver, so you won't be able to come up twice.
Okay.
Only once.
Thank you for that. That's so interesting.
That was McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes speaking with the head of Elections Canada, Mark Mayrand, who explains Canadians can cast their ballots on any day of the election campaign.
Still to come, we have a special two-part edition of the McLean's panel. Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes hosts a discussion with Google and Abacus Data, while political editor Paul Wells moderates a panel of partisans on how the campaign is going for each of the main parties.
Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with McLean's Magazine.
Still to come on the show, McLean's political editor Paul Wells sits down with partisans from the three major parties to get their takes on how the election is going so far. But first,
we have a special two-part edition of the McLean's panel. Earlier this week, McLean's hosted a special election primer event in Ottawa, bringing in experts from different fields and political parties to break down the campaign so far. The event aired live on CPAC and consisted of two main parts. First up is McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes, who moderated a panel looking at how Canadians feel about the election and what they are searching for online. The panel included Leslie Church from Google Canada and David Coletto, CEO of the polling firm Abacus Data. John started it off by asking Leslie Church to sketch what she calls the digital voter.
Over the last 4 years, there has been a ton of change in who the voter is in Canada. And actually working with David and Abacus Data, we've done some work to show that in the last 4 years, for example, 48% of Canadian eligible voters, so nearly half of all voters, are now saying that they're watching none or less TV than they were 4 years ago. On top of that, 30% of all voters are saying that they're relying on the internet now exclusively for their information about politics and the election. So that's a huge change, and it actually goes hand in hand with the way that we've seen technology adoption. I mean, when you think about this in context, and you remember that the last election in 2011 was barely a year after the first iPad was released. So I mean, that's the kind of change that we've actually seen, and you have to remember that we hit those milestones, the first smartphone in 2007, first tablet in 2010, 2011 was on the heel of that, but here we are 4 years later, and there has been, I'm sure with everybody in this room would agree, that there's been a ton of change in terms of how you access technology. But I think I want to talk about, John, if it's okay with you, a particular type of voter within these increasingly digitally savvy voters overall, and it's what we're calling the digital-only voter. 30% of Canadians right now are digital only. That means that they either have no cable or satellite, they've cut the cord, they're watching less than 2 hours of live TV a week, or they prefer to get their news about politics and elections online exclusively.
These young people mostly, Leslie, or what's the...
These actually aren't. It's a myth to think that these are just millennials. Frankly, over 20% of voters over 50 fall into this category of being digital only. So that is that alone, the over 50 crowd that are digital only, represents about 10% of the voting population overall.
And that would be a demographic that really votes,
huge,
too.
Huge. So this has been a seismic shift in terms of how people are getting information about campaigns, about politics, just in the last 4 years.
What kind of information are they looking for, Leslie? We talked a bit about this before. Like, what are they looking for? What are they asking about?
Questions that they're asking, first of all, about the leaders, for example. Right now, it's early in the campaign, there's a getting to know you phase that's happening. So a lot of the questions that we're seeing about the leaders are things like, how old is Stephen Harper, Tom Mulcair, Justin Trudeau? The answer, 43, 60, 56.
You know that? Yeah. It's ridiculous.
You can fact check me on your local search engine. Is Tom Mulcair married? Where was he born? What is Justin Trudeau's net worth? How long has Stephen Harper been prime minister? 9.5 years. And even really sort of trending questions, one that we saw just in the past week, was who are Ben and Rachel Harper?
Is that after their pictures show up in news shots and stuff? People see them and wonder who they are. It must be that, I guess.
Yeah, and on social media too. I mean, there's an interest in who are the people behind, you know, the presence of the leaders that they're seeing on the campaign trail.
And that's not necessarily fluff. I mean, to me, it seems like sometimes we think, oh, those are peripheral kind of questions, but people need to have some little narrative about their leaders. They want to know something beyond sort of what their platform is.
Yeah, and actually in some of the work that we've done, we've looked at what people are most interested in. They're interested in the debates, but they're very interested also in the tone and the style of the leaders. So they do want that kind of information about who is Justin Trudeau, who is Tom Mulcair or Stephen Harper, who are the men behind the mask, so to speak. So we're seeing a lot of that right now in terms of people kind of just getting that early impression of who are these people that are running for office and canvassing for my vote.
I'm just interested in the actual volume of questions about the parties and leaders. Mm-hmm. Do we have that, Anthony? Are those slides available?
I was just going
to ask you about that. What do you think?
So over the course, and we'll pull up this slide, these are searches for the leaders in August, and these are not absolute volumes. This is actually, this shows you a relative amount of searching that's happening for each of the leaders. So if we were to look at this before the writ dropped, you actually would have seen Stephen Harper significantly in front. He's the prime minister. He's a platform for, I think, for searching just going into the election. Since the debate, we've seen Justin Trudeau really close the gap in terms of searches vis-a-vis Harper. Tom Mulcair is back a little bit in terms of searches. He's been outpaced by Harper and Trudeau by about 3-1 and May some distance behind that. So, and those searches, I have to be clear, it's not about sentiment. These are searches to find out about who these people are. They're positive, they're negative. They really just convey a sense of interest and engagement more than anything. Kind of kicking the tires.
Oh, interesting. And the parties, similar numbers are?
Well, this is where it gets a little interesting. So with the parties, actually, we see a lot more search volume for the NDP. And with the Liberals and the Conservatives back a little bit, the NDP outpacing Liberal by about 3-2. So there's something interesting to look at here. I mean, I think that it's no secret that from the NDP's campaign strategy perspective, they've talked about their desire to have Tom Mulcair, or to have Canadians get to know Tom Mulcair better, to introduce him. They've been putting a lot of their kind of power behind that. But the NDP as a brand itself seems to be actually very strong. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the course of the campaign and what this actually means in terms of the different things that voters are actually using to make their calculation about who to vote for.
What about the issues? When people are asking about the policy stuff, what sorts of things interest them? Yeah. Where do they get engaged?
That's interesting. So, I mean, we have seen a lot more searches for some of the key issues that are being talked about in the campaign right now. Is Canada in a recession? Is far and away one of the top trending questions that we've seen, I think, as Canadians try to wade through the rhetoric that they're hearing about the state of our economy. Is the U.S. economy really recovering? Something that we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Who does Justin Trudeau consider middle class? We're hearing a lot about that, but what does that actually mean? And then we get into some questions about energy and the environment. You know, these are kind of the three E's I've been saying of issues that have been popular online. Economy, environment, energy. Is Keystone a good idea? That's been front and center because of Obama in the U.S. and it's come up in the debates. And what is the position of Trudeau, Harper, or the NDP on climate change? Again, a really common question.
I want to move just quickly over to Dave Coletto now, because a lot of what he says actually
kind of reinforces and speaks to what Leslie, the fascinating stuff that Leslie's just filled us in on. David, I want to get into some of the deep and subtle things, but you have a new poll out this week, so just for people, many people in this room will have already heard about it, but you want to walk us through just the what we call the horse race number first. What's the snapshot of a horse race as they, what, come around the first turn in this long, long race?
It's a long campaign. This is our first poll that we did. We did it over the weekend. And we saw continued NDP momentum. So the latest numbers among committed voters has the New Democrats at 35, the Conservatives at 29, and the Liberals at 26. Undecided voters represent about a quarter of the electorate at this point, so still a large number of people say they're undecided. One of the interesting things about the survey that we did is that we asked people, beyond just how you're going to vote, how firm is your vote? We're going to talk about this in a minute, but what we... The headline is the NDP is ahead, but there's still so many voters. We see almost 7 out of 10 who still say between now and Election Day they could change their mind. A lot of them are really open to changing their mind. So this campaign is only really beginning. We're already almost 3 weeks in, but for many voters it's still the beginning.
David, what do you think about where the leaders stand right now? It's interesting to have a campaign with two first-time candidates or for two first-time leaders. You always assume that they would have more, there'd be more fluidity in people's views of them than an established player like the Prime Minister. Is that showing up somehow? Where do you see the three leaders sizing?
Since the campaign started, we haven't seen too much change in the impressions of the leaders. What's interesting is, you know, you look at Stephen Harper's personal popularity or how people feel about him. His negative numbers are on the rise. Justin Trudeau actually rebounded. He was sort of headed downwards in the last few months. We've seen a spike in his support. And Tom Mulcair continues to do very well. He's the most popular leader in the country at this point. But one of the other things we did, and you can see it up on the screen there, is we asked people to sort of give us a character picture of each of the leaders. We asked them how well do each of these terms or words describe the leaders. And what I've done there with those pegs, those colored pegs, is the average. So the mean scores that each of these leaders have. And there's a few things that are interesting. So when you ask yourself, who is Stephen Harper in the eyes of voters? Well, he's somebody who's ready to be prime minister. Not surprising. He's been prime minister for almost a decade. He's tough and he's smart. Beyond that, fewer people think he's empathetic, fewer people think he's honest, and he's not that interesting to most people, which might explain why Ben and Rachel, his kids, are getting maybe more attention than he is on Google. When it comes to Mr. Trudeau, almost the opposite in many respects. So fewer people see him ready to be prime minister. Interesting test there of the impact of the Conservative attack ads on him. Mr. Trudeau is also seen as being less tough. He lags on that question. But he is more empathetic than Mr. Harper, more honest than Mr. Harper, or at least more people view him that way, I should say. And he's just as, quote, smart as the Prime Minister. Where Mr. Mulcair comes into all this is quite interesting in that he brings, and I think you can see this in the NDP strategy, he brings together both of the things that Mr. Harper and Mr. Trudeau sort of have the advantage on in many respects. So not only do people see him as empathetic, smart, warm-hearted in many respects, and interesting, but he's also ready to be prime minister and he's tough. So at this point in the election, I think Mr. Mulcair, although Canadians are still really getting to know him, that's one of the interesting things from the Google data is people aren't searching for Mr. Mulcair. They really don't attach him directly to the NDP brand yet, but I think largely because of the Alberta election and all that the positive halo effect that had on the NDP brand, it's given Mr. Mulcair a lift in a lot of these measures.
Dave, before we go on to another point, could I just back up? Did you say that, do you think that Mulcair is seen as warm-hearted, right? Because that would cut against the grain of a sort of stereotype about him that we often...
Yeah, I think the angry Tom idea is really a construction of, we always say, the Ottawa bubble, right? You ask people, is Tom angry? Well, there are some people who will say yes. You ask the open-ended question, give me one word to describe Tom. Far more people are likely to say beard than angry, right? No one really says angry. So he is seen as warm, and I think the attempts by the New Democrats, you saw it in the McLean's leaders' debate for him to smile a lot and seem very warm, is an attempt to move away from that. But I actually don't think it's really a problem. I think, you know, people are looking for a good balance between a tough, focused leader who gets things done, but somebody who's empathetic, who understands me, and maybe can smile from time to time.
That was McLean's Auto Bureau Chief John Geddes with a special panel on the election featuring Leslie Church with Google Canada and David Coletto, CEO of polling firm Abacus Data. To watch the full event, head to cpac.ca, or to listen to the audio, go to mcleans.ca.
Coming up after the break, McLean's political editor Paul Wells joins us for part two of this special McLean's panel. He's moderating a panel of partisans on how the campaign is going for each of the main parties. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with McLean's Magazine.
Well, we're going to move on now to our second half of that special two-part edition of the McLean's panel. Once again, this week's panel comes from an election primer event that McLean's held in Ottawa. We've heard from Google Canada and the polling firm Abacus Data. Now let's hear from the political parties. McLean's political editor Paul Wells sat down with party pundits to get their take on the election so far. He spoke with Lindsay Doyle for the Liberals, Kathleen Monk on the NDP, and Michelle Austin, a Conservative. None of them work for their parties anymore, but they have a lot to say on how the campaign has gone.
I'm going to go around the horn. We're going to go Liberal, New Democrat, Conservative, and we're going to ask just generally our panelists' perceptions of what the party's strategic objectives are in this campaign and how it's going so far. We're already 3 weeks into this thing. It's just going like thunder. Lindsay?
Guys, welcome to the longest campaign in Canadian history. I think people are, you know, starting to recognize just how much longer we have to go through this campaign. So 61 days left, I think. So the interesting side of the length of the campaign, a lot of people have said early on, is this lends a lot of opportunity for errors. But in my opinion, it gives a lot of opportunity for forgiveness. What happens in the early weeks of the campaign may not resonate with voters near the end of the campaign. So I think that at least for the Liberal side, we're starting the campaign in third place. Dead last. Polling numbers are not positive, but given the length of the campaign, I think that there is a lot of opportunity for growth. We've had a few very interesting things kind of happen in the first few weeks of the campaign. You had a debate very early on. Well done, by the way. It was a great opportunity for all three leaders to get out at the beginning of the campaign, talk about their narrative, ask each other hard questions, fight it out a little bit, and Canadians were able to see earlier on, as opposed to, you know, 2 or 3 weeks out, as we would traditionally see with consortium type debates, what exactly the leaders are standing for. One thing that I took away from the debate specifically was the fact that Mr. Trudeau showed up with pants on, did very well.
Yes.
I think he surprised a lot of critics who had said for the longest time, not only is he not ready, but is he going to be able to, coherently speak and stand up at the same time? He did both. I think he surpassed people's expectations. Another thing he did quite well was at the end of the debate, he actually was able to address the fact that, attack ads have been going on for quite some time. He's able to kind of reframe the narrative the way that the Liberals want. There's also the Duffy trial going on, which is a unique opportunity for both opposition leaders to kind of frame, what this trial means for Canadians, what it means for the Senate, but also what it means for the Prime Minister and his staff. So I think that's been quite interesting. The challenge for the Liberals is going to be to try to show themselves as the other, alternative to the Prime Minister. Right now, obviously, the NDP is doing very well. And so what the Liberals need to do is try to maintain the consistency that they've had throughout the campaign, try to remain error-free, but also to start to build some momentum so that people do start to view Mr. Trudeau as the alternative to Harper as opposed to Mr. Mulcair. So lots of time to do that, and I think they'll be, continuing to work hard, and we'll see where things go in the coming weeks.
Kathleen Monk, what is that guy with the beard, Tom Mulcair? What's he up to?
Well, I was thinking about this panel last night. I said, so if someone, rightfully was on vacation, say in the Muskokas or Georgian Bay or maybe Lake Huron, having a nice vacation, and just came back to Ottawa today, they would be assaulted, because today, as you all woke up, was the first day that signs could actually be on lawns here in Ottawa, because we have a bylaw that says you can't put them up until 60 days to the election. So today's the first day you'll see that kind of splattering of blue, red, orange, more orange, hopefully, on lawns, on private lawns, and public lands soon. But what do you need to know if you just came back from vacation? Like Lindsay said, it's the longest campaign in some time in Canadian history. A very exciting debate happened. The Duffy trial has been going on. There's been lots of process stories, both around polls, certainly around some vetting processes of some of the certain parties. This funny phenomenon of a premier B tour that's happening with the Liberals. liberals in terms of Kathleen Wynne and now Brian Gallant kind of entering into the fray for the liberals on a national level. But ultimately, I think what I would tell the person who's just returned home from vacation, what they need to know about what's happening is this, that this campaign will be a referendum on Harper, on whether voters, whether Canadians feel that he deserves a fourth term. And subsequent to that is there has to be, and David pointed this out, as did Leslie, is that there has to be an alternative. If you're going to decide that you don't want Harper to have another fourth term, then you have to decide who are you going to choose. And there has to be a viable alternative. And for a long time, as been pointed out, it was going to be Justin Trudeau. But increasingly, since the beginning of 2015, we are in a true third three-way race. And Mulcaire, what he needs to do is to focus on two things. One, on the continued degrading of the Conservative brand, which luckily the Conservatives are helping him with through the Duffy trial and other measures, and some even Conservative supporters. And he did that, and also his handling of the economy. We are sliding into a recession. We'll know in 11 days on September 1st whether we are, in fact, technically in a recession. But I think most Canadians at home are feeling it already in their pocketbooks. And then also they need to be focusing, Mulcair needs to focus on continuing to attract those former Conservatives that were attracted by a fiscal discipline that Conservatives have always held dear. This is Stephen Harper, who David Frum pointed out in an excellent Atlantic piece that came to age really seeing what happened in the Mulroney government when his cabinet used excesses and expenses and then went on to come into power as opposition leader when the Liberals were also spending millions of dollars in the sponsorship scandal. So this is a real hit on the Conservative brand, and I think if Mulcair can continue to drive that, that will help him in BC and Saskatchewan.
And now, Michelle, it's a referendum on Stephen Harper, or is it?
What was the question? How's it going?
How's your week been, Michelle? We'll start there.
So I have two answers to that question. The first is the spin answer, and the second is the real answer. And as a Conservative, I'm obligated to give you the spin answer first. So I will draw on that most revered movie, the Lego movie, and say, everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome!
Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Nice. So from that spin point of view, I could say thanks, Leslie, for showing those slides. Clearly, the economy is the most important question when people are searching through. And then when Kathleen says fiscal discipline and the NDP, you say, tee-hee-hee, please.
No.
Ray Days, no, no, Manitoba. No. Nova Scotia elected one NDP government, turned and ran the other direction. Okay, so and that's, you know, the spin. We're making announcements. We want to help you buy houses. We want to protect your children. And that is very traditional approach to the Conservative campaign. We are out there every day, first thing in the morning, trying to grab the news, making announcements. Did you want the second answer?
Yes.
It may have been a rough week. We may be in for an even worse day today. I don't think that it's been a particularly great focus for the Conservatives right now. We are no longer having what we thought would be this, well, at this point, great debate, which actually we're looking for on issues like childcare, two totally different visions on how you focus your family and raise your family. Instead, we're explaining. So, and the old expression is, if you're explaining, you're losing. And we're explaining on issues that we really didn't want to talk about that have nothing to do with policy.
That was McLean's political editor Paul Wells discussing the campaign so far with political pundits Lindsay Doyle from the Liberals, Kathleen Monk with the NDP, and Conservative Michelle Austin.
That's it for this week's episode. Remember to check out the other podcasts from McLean's. We have Bibliopod, our podcast about books, and The Thrill, the show that's all about pop culture.
But for more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.